Here's the Journal of Truth. Thank you for staying with us. This is your host, Margaret Prescott, today on our weekly broadcast, an update on Haiti. Violence. Well-armed death squads are still at work terrorizing impoverished Haitians. Meanwhile, some of the left in the United States are seemingly confused and are promoting some of the key death squad leaders, included Jimmy Cherizer, known as Barbecue, and Guy Philippe, as revolutionary leaders. And meanwhile, the agreement brokered by CARICOM, the Caribbean Heads of State, for a transitional council, after which the much-hated Ariel Henry would step down, has still yet to be finalized. Moïse Jean-Charles, whose party, Petit Dessalines, made an alliance with both Guy Philippe and Barbecue. And it is said that Moïse Jean-Charles has ambitions to be president of Haiti. And so he first agreed for his party to be part of the transitional council. Then he changed his mind and said that his party would not be part of the transitional council. And now he's changed his mind yet again and said, yes, they would be part of the transitional council. Needless to say, this has created confusion and it has created division. So what's going on? Our guests today are journalist and Haiti expert Kevin Pina and Pierre Lavoisier, who hail from the south of Haiti and is a leading human rights campaigner for democracy on the ground in Haiti. But first, let us go to a clip from Sky News about the violence impoverished Haitians are now facing. Let's go to that clip now.
Well, gang violence can flare up in different places at any given time. And when it does, it means that whole communities basically have to lock down. It means that shops are shut so people don't get food. There's a petrol station up here. There's queues that can last hours when they're open. See the police on the streets occasionally. What we've noticed today, though, is one, bodies on street corners. Who's killed them? Some locals say it was police. Others say it's gang members. We're at the presidential palace where we were there yesterday, and now there's a full-on gun battle going on. You drive down a road and suddenly cars start turning around and going the other way, and you know that it's getting dangerous. That's the situation in Haiti right now. Now, the hope is that a national council will take over running of the country and set new election dates, but there is nothing to indicate when they're going to sit. Added to that, that the gangs have already said that they are not going to cooperate and they're threatening violence against any of the politicians who take part. So Haiti at the moment is stuck in this sort of chaotic, not moving in any direction, and continuing violence, which seems to be getting worse.
All righty, so that was a clip from a Sky News. We live in a global world. We're all interrelated. So on Sojourner Truth, we work to bring directly to you news and views on local, national, and international policies and stories that affect us all. And we draw out how those of us most impacted, women, communities of color, and other communities are responding. We also discuss the interrelationship between art and politics. Now for our news headlines.
For Pacifica Radio, I'm Christina Onestet. Intense shelling and airstrikes in Gaza have killed more than 50 Palestinians, bringing the death toll to more than 32,300, according to Gaza's health ministry. Areas targeted include Rafah and central Gaza. Meanwhile, Israeli forces continue attacks against hospitals Al-Shifa, Al-Amal, and Khan Yunis and Al-Nasser Hospital. The Geneva-based Euro-Mediterranean says it's documented Israeli forces setting fire to homes with people inside of them near the Al-Shifa Hospital. And there are reports of continued firing of people seeking aid amidst a famine crisis. Pacifica's Vanessa Tate reports.
At least 19 Palestinian civilians have been killed by Israeli tank fire at an aid distribution point in Gaza as they tried to receive food and water, according to the local health ministry. Israeli forces have killed at least 560 and injured over 1,500 Palestinians in recent incidents involving aid trucks. That's according to a new report released this weekend by the Euro-Mediterranean Human Rights Monitor. Famine is imminent in northern Gaza, where catastrophic hunger is widespread. UNRWA said it has been told by Israel that its food convoys will no longer be allowed into the area, a situation it called outrageous. A day after standing near some of the 7,000 aid trucks currently prevented from entering Gaza by Israel, United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres demanded an immediate ceasefire.
Nothing justifies the collective punishment of the Palestinian people. Now more than ever, it is time for an immediate humanitarian ceasefire.
I'm Vanessa Tate.
Israeli Defense Minister Yoav Gallant is in Washington, D.C. to meet with the Biden administration, where he'll lobby for weapons and discuss Israeli plans for a ground invasion into Rafah, which President Joe Biden has called a red line. Speaking on ABC this weekend, Vice President Kamala Harris reiterated that position.
We're looking at about 1.5 million people in Rafah who are there because they were told to go there, most of them. And so we've been very clear that it would be a mistake to move into Rafah with any type of military operation.
A mistake, but would there be consequences if he does move forward?
Well, we're going to take it one step at a time, but we've been very clear in terms of our perspective on whether or not that should happen.
Are you ruling out that there would be consequences from the United States?
I am ruling out nothing.
The United States has provided more than 100 deliveries of weapons to Israel. A global day of action for a ceasefire in Gaza this past weekend, led by religious groups in the U.S. and around the world in 19 nations, held 22-mile walks that spans a distance of Gaza from the north to the Rafah border, where more than 1 million Palestinians have fled to. Four men accused of staging an attack on a Russian concert hall in Moscow that killed more than 130 people Friday appeared before a Moscow court, showing signs of severe beatings and facing charges of terrorism. The four men are citizens of Tajikistan. The Islamic State group has claimed responsibility. Russia's President Vladimir Putin has blamed Ukraine. FSN's Julia Chapman reports.
Four men were brought into a Moscow courtroom late on Sunday night to face charges. All of them showed signs of being beaten, with one barely conscious in a wheelchair. Two pleaded guilty to the charges, with the other two unable to answer. The Kremlin hasn't confirmed that Islamic State was behind the attack, although the group has taken responsibility and published footage. Putin spokesperson Dmitry Peskov declined to comment on U.S. reports that it shared intelligence ahead of the attack. He also refused to comment on the treatment of the four suspects. Julia Chapman, London.
Russia launched missiles against Kiev for the third time in 5 days, firing ballistic missiles at Kiev from occupied Crimea. City authorities say the missiles were intercepted. In the U.S., Congress passed a funding bill for six key agencies, including Defense, Department of Homeland Security, Education, and Labor. Catherine Carley reports.
Congress passed a $1 trillion spending package and avoided a government shutdown. President Joe Biden's signature capped a budget process extended by 6 months and requiring four stopgaps. But more than half of House Republicans voted no. Georgia Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene filed a motion to remove Speaker Mike Johnson for working with Democrats to pass it.
This is basically a warning, and it's time for us to go through the process, take our time, and find a new Speaker of the House that will stand with Republicans and our Republican majority.
Meanwhile, Wisconsin Republican Mike Gallagher says he'll retire in less than a month rather than serve out his term. That'll leave Johnson with a one-vote margin. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
I'm Christina Onnestad reporting for Pacifica Radio.
Those were our news headlines. This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth, and we're going to spend the hour giving an update on what the latest, what's going on in the ground, what some of the key players are, and some of the misinformation that we are getting from media reports on the ground. I would like to welcome our first guest, Kevin Pina. Kevin Pina, he is a journalist. He has lived in Haiti. He has covered Haiti for several decades now. Kevin Pina, thank you for joining us.
Given what is going on now on the ground, we hear from mainstream media that Haiti is in the grips of so-named gang violence. We keep hearing the names of Barbecue. We also hear the names of Guy Philippe. Some people are also talking about Moïse Jean-Charles from Petite Dessalines as being the most popular politician in Haiti. And he was reported to have made an alliance with Guy Philippe and Barbecue for the governance of Haiti. Anything you want to say about this?
Guy Philippe, of course, was instrumental in being used by the administration of George W. Bush to justify the 2004 coup against the democratically elected government of Jean-Bertrand Aristide that resulted in more than 7,500 elected officials at the federal and local levels either being driven from office into hiding, having to go into exile, and in cases being murdered during that 2004 coup, that U.S.-backed 2004 coup. Guy Philippe, of course, later would be convicted of drug money laundering, spent 6.5 years of a 9-year sentence in prison. In the middle of his trial, his lawyers tried to introduce that the people that he was laundering the proceeds of drug trafficking for were attached to U.S. intelligence. The judge immediately shut down the public proceedings, called the lawyers and the prosecutors into her office, had the record sealed, and Guy Philippe shortly thereafter pled guilty. He was the only prisoner in Atlanta Federal Penitentiary that was allowed a 24-hour access to a cell phone and 24-hour access to the media on the ground in Haiti. Literally, from the day that he arrived to start his 6-year jail sentence, was already giving interviews to Haitian media from his jail cell. Clearly, 6.5 years, they cut him loose. They quote unquote, deported him back to Haiti, knowing full well, and many Haitians suspecting that he has handlers to this day, who knew full well what he was going to come back to Haiti and do. And that was, he cut an alliance, a deal with Barbecue, Jimmy Cherizaire, the former police officer who was a human rights violator, was kicked out of the police, had to leave because of several high profile murders that he was involved in Grand Ravine, a slaughter of innocents in Grand Ravine. He then began to work to take over Soane's old base, the Delma Base Delma, around the area of Delma 2 in Haiti's capital, where he began to serve as an enforcer for the PHTK regimes. Because remember that after Martelly was elected, there were innumerable protests against his regime because of the just horrendous levels of corruption and, of course, election fraud that those elections were mired in 2010, 2011. We also know that he was an enforcer for Jovenel Moïse and very close to him. You know, when Jovenel Moïse was assassinated in July of 21, he made a big deal of carrying a photo of Jovenel Moïse and kissing it and holding a sort of ceremony in his area, lamenting the death of his paymaster, who was Jovenel Moïse. So Jimmy Cherizaire, this cop, has a history of working with the PHTK regime in repressing opposition demonstrations. And of course, we know that most of his infamous attacks have occurred in areas where Lavalas has been strongest in the capital. I'm thinking of Bel Air, I'm thinking of Delma, Solino.
La Saline,
where he is fingered as being the primary culprit who burned down homes, who murdered people in their beds, some of them sleeping. Las Salinas is infamous. And this is not, and by the way, I just want to be clear to those people who are going to, I'm just going to presume a few criticisms here. I am no fan of RNDDH or NCHR. I probably have been one of those biggest critics, National Coalition for Haitian Rights, which then became RNDDH, who are one of the people who released those reports, really substantial reports about what went on. But that's not where I get my information from. I got my information from people in the neighborhood who documented, who sent information, sent video, sent documentary evidence of Jimmy Sherizaire's involvement with a few PHDK politicians to commit those massacres in La Saline. 2018 we're talking about, right? November 2018. He now is working in alliance with Guy Philippe, Moïse Jean-Charles, who was a former mayor of Millau, who myself and many other activists worked with. We helped to build the peasant radio station in Millau. We worked with the Millau Peasant Association there with Moïse. After the coup d'etat of 2004, Moïse gave us lots of human rights reporting. You know, this idea that that Guy Philippe's guys were putting people in containers, right? Filling them with Lavalas supporters and throwing them into the sea for them to drown in those containers. That information came directly from testimony of Moïse Jean-Charles. However, in 2015, when it became clear he wanted to be president and he wanted Lavalas to anoint him as to run for the presidency, and they did not and would not, because of his politics being all over the map, because of his hubris, because it's about Moïse, it's no longer about what Moïse believes is best for the Haitian people. That became clear to people, you know, earlier on. Ever since then, he has, you know, worked tirelessly to try to co-opt the base of Lavalas, in some areas being successful, in many areas not, which is why Sherizaire's work of displacing entire populations and entire communities that where Lavalas support was greatest after the coup, before the coup, after the coup. There have literally been tens of thousands of people. The election map, as it would have been, has been completely reset by the gangs that are led by Jimmy Sherizaire in those communities. Now working with Moïse Jean-Charles, 1 week is with Guy Philippe and with Jimmy Sherizaire barbecue in his new Vivre Ensemble, which many are now, which means live together. And many are now beginning to refer to it as Mourir Ensemble, which is die together, because this is not a life-affirming movement, revolutionary movement that's at the benefit of the Haitian people. Instead, this has become a death cult that Jimmy Sherizaire is leading in Haiti. And so Moïse Jean-Charles threw his lot in with Guy Philippe and with barbecue when Ariel Henry was forced to not return to the country. That's 1 week. The next week, he does a complete 180 in his usual opportunistic way. And now he wants to participate in the transition council of CARICOM, sponsored by CARICOM, being brokered by CARICOM in Jamaica. This guy politically is all over the map. And, you know, I'm in touch with social media. I'm constantly seeing what the vibe is. I'm in touch with Haiti, people on the ground in Haiti constantly. And they just no longer trust him. They don't believe what he says. Now, can he mobilize a few folks? Sure, absolutely. But does he have the trust of the Haitian people to be able to be a substantive, committed leader of some consistency? I think that there's a big question mark there now for many Haitians.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, Kevin, I know you're really pressed for time here, so I appreciate you taking the time to speak with us. But, you know, there are people, including on these Pacifica radio stations, who are putting forward barbecue, Sherizaire, as a revolutionary leader. I mean, some of them even go as far as putting Guy Philippe into that category. What is that about, in your view?
Well, that is the effect of what has basically been, you know, a campaign through these paramilitary gangs that served the purpose of U.S. foreign policy under two successive Martha Lee regimes. When their paymaster was killed, there was some sense that they were then released to prey upon the population. But the ultimate effect is really what the real purpose is here. Their purpose has been to drive the population into desperation as a form of mass pacification. Both Guy Philippe and Barbecue are well aware that their handlers, whether that be in U.S. intelligence or whether that be directed from someplace else, they're both aware that their handlers won't let them anywhere near forming or influencing the outcome of a future government in Haiti. Their purpose, it appears, is to soften the way, to pacify the population through violence, to soften the way for what are going to be foreign-sponsored elections. Again, remember, these elections are not just going to be about the presidency and parliament. The U.S. has been pushing. They pushed it through Moïse, Jovenel Moïse, and they continue to push for a constitutional amendment that will, for the first time, because it wasn't allowed under the 1987 Constitution, allow foreign interests to control mineral rights in Haiti. And wow, that is a major change. And what we're really talking about is the fact that we know that there's more than 300 tons of iridium under Haiti's soil. It's a precious mineral that is used in computer components. And if you look at the price per ounce of iridium today, you might get just a small sense of what's at stake in this. Martha Lee attempted it. He began those sweetheart deals with many of those foreign companies. Under his presidency, there was a lot of pushback. It was never ratified by the parliament because, of course, he ended up ruling by decree. So did Jovenel Moïse. There haven't been elections in Haiti for quite a while. But in the meantime, it's allowed them to make deals under the table without approval of parliament, as the 1987 Constitution demands, and benefit a lot of individuals personally within the PHTK party, and of course those foreign interests themselves, from illegally mining Haiti right now. But to get to that iridium, they're going to have to strip mine, and they know that that's going to require a change to Haiti's constitution, and that's one of the purposes of this intervention.
Wow, and I'm sure information a lot of our listeners don't know, hearing for the first time that there is mineral wealth in Haiti. But Kevin, on this business about Guy Philippe or Barbecue, Jimmy Serizer, not basically running for president or their handlers. But isn't, Moïse Jean-Charles in a different category, so to speak? He was a former mayor. You know, he heads up Petite Dessalines. He goes on. Dessalines, of course, one of the great leaders of the Haitian Revolution. You know, he refers to Dessalines as his father, you know, that kind of thing. So couldn't Moïse Jean-Charles, in a way, be a voice for the likes of these terrorists, because the people who are suffering the most from these terror activities are the most impoverished Haitians. Any thoughts on that? I mean, I know neither one of us has a crystal ball, obviously, but just watching the shenanigans that has happened, even with the proposal of the transitional council proposed by CARICOM and agreed to by some players on the ground in Haiti, it seems as though he may still have that ambition. And that's one part of it. And the other part of it, it seems to me so many people are coming out of the woodwork as experts on Haiti, some of them using pretty radical or what they consider radical rhetoric, or even using some of the language of Lavalas because they know it's popular. But these are people who have had a history of undermining Lavalas, if not being directly involved in the coup against President Aristide. Kevin?
Well, yeah, there were a lot of folks in the so-called left who just got it wrong. They dropped the ball. They became part of that movement that was critical. They became part of that movement that involved itself in character assassination of Aristide to soften the ground for that eventual intervention. You know, and let's be clear. You know, it resulted in what? A 13-year, 8-month United Nations military occupation, the destruction of Haiti's democratic institutions, which it's never recovered from, and where the U.S. had virtual control, the U.S.-led core group had virtual control over the policy of Haiti. They promised they were going to rebuild Haiti's democratic institutions after the 2004 coup. They devoted billions to it, and only to end up where we are today. It's absurd. And if you put the money that was raised and absconded after the 2010 earthquake into that pot, you know, these people are scoundrels. And, you know, back to this question of Moise Jean-Charles, you know, Moise has been noted. I have gotten many emails with photos of him in D.C., taking meetings with State Department reps off the books. I want to know what happened in those meetings. What was he talking really? About with the State Department? What are his contacts within the State Department? And is he also involved with any lobbying for firms on K Street in D.C., mm-hmm. which, of course, any player has to be? And we know that they'd like to do that surreptitiously. But there are a lot of questions that are surrounding Moise Jean-Charles that he has not answered or wanted to address. In the meantime, he presents himself as a leftist himself. He goes to Cuba and wants to pose with Raul Castro. You know, he goes to Venezuela.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to pose with Maduro. And then, of course, he shows up in Russia with Putin. He recently lied. As a matter of fact, you know, when he did this 180-degree turn where he said, okay, I'm not going to support Guy Philippe and Barbecue anymore. I want to be part of the Transition Council because Russia told me. Because Putin told me. That's literally what he said. That was his excuse that he gave to people on the ground. And the Russian government has responded, we didn't say that. We had nothing to do with Moise Jean-Charles' decision to make that about face. Russia doesn't give a darn about Moise Jean-Charles. It's like a puffer fish, right? It's like, To earn his stripes, he's got to puff himself up, and he's fooled a lot of people. I'll admit what I consider fooling a lot of people, but you know, and I know him personally, right? He was once somebody who I counted among my friends, who I thought had a lot of political integrity, and I no longer believe that about Moise Jean-Charles. Yeah. The more I hear and the more that I see. And I think many Haitians are also circumspect about it. I think you're going to see a real ironing out of a lot of these issues and contradictions over the next few months, especially if the folks in Jamaica can get their act together to unify. And by the way, Moise Jean-Charles is not a unifying force in that. Moise Jean-Charles is trying to manipulate behind the scenes to appoint people from Petite Dessalines as observers and then want them to have voting. You know, there's 7 members of different sectors of Haitian society, and there's 2 observers. Well, he's maneuvering to have one of those observers be part of his party and then trying to get the rest of the council to approve them as a voting member, changing it from 7 to 8. And of course, the people who are already on it and the agreements they've made, they're saying, what the heck? What's this about? And so it's just slowing the process down. It's just being divisive. He is not working toward unity. Again, Moise Jean-Charles is about Moise Jean-Charles is about Moise Jean-Charles.
Yeah. And just finally, I mean, it was reported in the Miami Herald that Moise Jean-Charles wrote to the Prime Minister of Barbados, Mia Mottley, who has played an outsized role in all of the negotiations of CARICOM, saying that he wants to be back in the council. And interestingly enough, that article also reported not directly from Prime Minister Mottley, but from a source saying that she is now proposing a 9-member voting council, which of course creates all kinds of chaos. I haven't been able to confirm from the prime minister. I did ask to respond whether or not that is her view. But what you're saying about this Moise Jean-Charles and the 8-member council and trying to increase that, you know, absolutely makes sense to me. But finally, also, Kevin, it does seem as though part of, on the one hand, what's happening with this fight over the numbers of the transitional council is a way to get as many PhD folks in there and to isolate Lavalas, who will have a seat on the council. But I refer to a lot of what's happening now as a continuation of the 2004 coup, because it does seem as though the U.S. and the core group, and I don't know how, and their influence on CARICOM, it seems, is like anybody but Lavalas. They don't want Lavalas anywhere near power ever again in Haiti. And it seems as though they'll do anything to ensure that result. Yeah. Just some final thoughts from you, Kevin, because I know you got to run. I'd love to talk with you more, so we'll have you back. But just some final thoughts. Yeah.
I also want to address this question of, you know, it reminds me of 1994 in some ways, too, when he literally felt he had a gun to his head, you know, in order to stop the killing. FROP, the CIA creature, was murdering, torturing, raping, doing heinous acts of violence against the Haitian people. The Haitian military was chewing up the population as well. And Aristide wanted to stop the killing. He dispatched Leslie Voltaire to Paris to make the agreement of the Paris Accords. Its central idea was about IMF austerity measures. Leslie Voltaire signed it. He had been forced into giving general amnesty to the military, these killers, upon his return. The UN passed a resolution. U.S. troops went in with Aristide at the head. Everybody said, oh, he's a sellout. He sold out to U.S. imperialism. Look how awful, you know, he is, and, you know, what a traitorous group Lavalas is. Well, you know, what people don't remember is that first, Aristide called in Oscar Arias, did a poll which said that 67%, which almost mirrored the number he was elected by in 1990, said they didn't want the military anymore. Next thing Aristide did was, over the objections and the condemnation of the CIA, the Pentagon, and the State Department, he retired the entire military except the marching band. Mm-hmm. Next thing is, he immediately reneged on the IMF austerity measures, and he and Préval then worked together to keep those intact until he was reelected in 2000. And then he took the profits from those state-run industries and created the largest social safety net Haiti has ever seen then and since. So it reminds me of that moment. Of course, I don't think it's an accident that, again, there's Leslie Voltaire now. He's been appointed as the Lavalas representative on the Transition Council. But I want people to remember that you cannot confuse tactics for strategy. And that if history is any precedent, this is, as Lavalas often says, mach long. This is a long march. And, you know, if we look at history, Lavalas has never sold out the Haitian people. Lavalas has always been consistent in its putting the Haitian people first. Now, that doesn't mean that there weren't a lot of abolocho, as they call them, political opportunists who didn't glob onto it like Moise Jean-Charles in the past. But that idea of Lavalas representing the majority of the population and moving from poverty to dignity, from misery to poverty with dignity, you know, that literacy campaign that he used those state-run industry profits for, 600 Alpha Restos, right? Literacy restaurants that fed the people, the Service Plus that he put in, the schools that were built during his administration, the public plazas that people could go to that were built, the housing projects that were built under his administration after he was elected in 2000. You know, people don't realize that those were those state-run industries that they were trying to, that they made him agree to privatize in the Paris Accord in 1994, but that he never allowed to happen, and then use those profits to the benefit of the Haitian people. And where's the brother to now? What is he doing now? He has committed himself. He's built a university of world-class quality that is literally graduating thousands of students, lawyers, doctors, nurses, architects, who are committed to social justice.
Right, absolutely.
All of the character assassination, all of the lies that they promulgated and that people spread about him. And that's the, you know, that has to bug them. But he is this example. He's never let down this idea that education is the key to liberty in Haiti. He's remained consistent to it. And I think that in many ways, that's indicative of the values of the Famille Lavalas Executive Committee as well. Those people on that council have also remained true to those values and those goals for creating a better life for the majority of Haiti's people.
Absolutely. Kevin Pina, I know you have to dash. We're going to have to leave it there. A good way to leave this discussion, but we will absolutely have you back. And I think what you outlined are the very reasons that the core group and all the powers that be right now are maneuvering to, try to ensure that Lavalas is, you know, doesn't play a key role in upcoming government. Kevin Pina, thank you so very much for joining us.
Thanks,
appreciate
Mom.
You. All righty. Bye-bye. If you've missed any part of this hour from 10 this morning for 90 days after that, just go to kpfk.org, scroll down to archives, click on Sojourner Truth. You'll be able to hear the show in its entirety, and you can subscribe for a free podcast. Also, check us out on SoundCloud. We are heard nationwide and worldwide 24/7 on SoundCloud. Just look for Sojourner Truth with Margaret Prescott. And today I'd like to give a shout out to our SoundCloud listeners in Detroit, Michigan, and internationally to our SoundCloud listeners throughout the Caribbean region. Earlier in the show, we heard from Kevin Pina, who has lived in Haiti and is a journalist. He has been covering Haiti for several decades right now. And he spoke about who, went into great detail about who Guy Philippe is, who Jimmy Cherizier, known as Barbecue, is, and also Maurice Jean-Charles. He spoke very frankly about that, as well as some that he thought to be considered their handlers, i.e. the U.S. and the core group. And he also ended his time on the program talking about all the achievements of the President Aristide and his party, Lavalas. Now we're going to continue our discussion with Pierre Lavoisier, who is a well-known human rights campaigner. He is a co-founder of Haiti Action Committee. He hails from the south of Haiti. And Pierre, welcome back to Sojourner Truth.
Thank you very much, Margaret. Very much appreciated.
Okay, so Pierre, I gave you, because you likely did not hear the interview with Kevin Pina, and I gave you some idea of the areas that he covered. And also you heard the clip from Sky News that we played earlier in the program about just the suffering happening of people on the ground in Haiti. And Pierre, let's just start there, because for people who are running around calling the likes of Barbecue and Guy Philippe revolutionary leaders, let's talk a bit about who are the people paying the highest price for the terror that's happening against grassroots communities in Haiti. Pierre, your views on this?
Yes, this talk of revolutionaries, when you're talking about the likes of Guy Philippe and Jimmy Cherizier Barbecue, it is just silliness. It's rubbish. It's the kind of talk that only people who are totally misguided or don't know anything at all about Haiti would be repeating. But those who do know about Haiti and are saying that, it's definitely, they are promoting a big lie. And many Haitians feel that when they are doing that, they are agents of confusion purposely to create at the service of the empire. And basically, we are talking about at the service of the imperialist forces that have been occupying Haiti for the past 20 years and are promoting this kind of chaos and violence in the country. Because the situation, the way it is, I mean, I grew up under Papa Doc Duvalier, and he used to project himself as a revolutionary, a leader of the third world. But the people, over 50,000 people, it was estimated, were massacred by Papa Doc and his son, Baby Doc, over about a 29-year period. And all of these people, for the overwhelming majority, were the very poor, were the people of Haiti who were working for low wages, almost starvation wages. These were the people, the peasantry, the women, you know, even children, you know, were the victims of that regime. And anybody who wanted one person, one vote was called a communist and killed by the regime with the support of the United States. And Papa Doc used to project himself and say he's a revolutionary for whom? And for what? It was definitely a revolutionary for this quote unquote revolutionary was acting, was repressing the popular movement in Haiti at the time that was demanding democracy, that was demanding a seat at the table, that wanted to know about our mineral resources, the bauxite in Haiti, the copper that was being extracted. Where was this money going? It was going to the pockets of the Duvaliers. And when people were asking questions, what about schools, hospitals? What about support for peasant farmers? Then these people were massacred. So growing up with that and seeing the same playbook today with the Jimmy Cherizier and the likes of and Guy Philippe, it's that old soup warmed over again. And so we, the people of Haiti, totally reject that. I do reject it, and it's rubbish.
Yeah, and let's talk a little bit now, because it's very clear, it's clearer, right, when we look at people like Guy Philippe and Barbecue. You might recall Sojourner Truth. We actually were the first international team that went into La Saline and recorded, made a video of people in that community naming Barbecue and talking about the horrific massacre that he orchestrated there with the backing of the Jovenel Moïse regime at the time. Just really horrific, right, back in 2018. So we know, and we know Guy Philippe, who we have covered on the show before, when he was, before the 2004 coup, he was in the Dominican Republic being trained basically by CIA operatives to then come into Haiti to help orchestrate a coup against Jean-Bertrand Aristide, the first democratically elected president. So we know him. But what is less clear is the role of Moïse Jean-Charles. Now, you and I, Pierre, and so did Kevin, we've known Moïse Jean-Charles for quite a long time now, and he heads this party called Petite Dessalines. And in the intro to the show, I talked about how Petite Dessalines was given a voting space on the Transitional Council. And then Moïse issued, with great drama, a statement saying they're not going to participate in the Transitional Council. So he changed his mind. And now apparently he's changed his mind again and said Petite Dessalines will be part of the Transitional Council. Now, when I spoke to Kevin Pina earlier, Kevin recalls how back in 2015, Moïse Jean-Charles wanted to be the candidate for Lavalas for the presidency, and that Lavalas wasn't having it because by then his reputation had pretty much been tarnished. But he knows and understands how popular Lavalas is on the ground. And so a lot of the rhetoric that he uses, progressive rhetoric, are, you know, some of what he assumes, you know, people would understand given the position of Lavalas. So he now is playing. Talk a little bit about the role that he's playing, because Kevin Pina even implied that Bouishan Charles is known to have gone to Washington, D.C., to have known to be meeting with, U.S. officials there, and implied that perhaps he has a handler, right? As Guy Philippe also implied, had a handler. So I'm wondering about this role then of Maurice Jean-Charles, and he is being CARICOM, for example. There's some people that are spreading the word around, not only CARICOM, but picked up by others, that he is the most popular politician on the ground in Haiti. Pierre, any thoughts on who this person is? Jean-Charles?
Yes, like Kevin, and as you mentioned, like you, I've known Moïse since Moïse Jean-Charles. I knew him when he was mayor of Milo, and also during the coup, throughout that period up to the coup of 2004.
Yeah, he was a good guy, right? I remember that. He was a good guy.
Uh-huh. Yes, definitely. Following that, up to 2006, 2007. But then I was told there was a change in him, and not living in Haiti, I could trust members of the delegation that went and met with him, and they said there was a big change. And one of the things is that it makes no sense, because for him to have been founder of the party of President Préval called Unité. First, there was Vérité, and later on, he helped put together the party of President Préval called Unité. This is very much in violation of the Famille Lavalas Charter, where you cannot be a member of two political parties at the same time. And so, clearly, to many people and to most observers, and I'm talking about people who are looking at the situation with clear eyes, they were very clear that there was a break during that time with Famille Lavalas, because he had chosen to be part of another political party that he co-founded with President Préval called Unité. And so there was no question that way before this time, there was no way that Lavalas would have picked him or selected him, because he had clearly gone into another party, would have picked him to be a presidential candidate. And so the time within that time frame of 2015, now this thing had happened way before. We are talking 2007, 2008. And so, and to see that he has teamed up with Guy Philippe. Guy Philippe is a man who I'm sure Kevin Pina has talked about, was guilty, and the people who were under him were so guilty of many, many massacres in Haiti. And prior to that, when in 1996 he returned to Haiti from his training in Ecuador, according to journalist Norluc Dorange, he had been very much involved in helping to corrupt the police department by introducing the whole thing of drug trafficking, protection of drug dealers while he was in charge of the police, and also prostitution ring, and going and being the enforcer, really, of people who were stealing money or drugs from the cartel and really enforcing discipline and brutality. And the journalist Norluc Dorange even said that kidnappings of those people started with that. Yeah. And so as a commander, he was really involved in turning the police into a corrupt institution, not only just him, but him and a number of his colleagues who had received the training. So people have to wonder, what kind of training are they giving these guys? Because not only do we find Guy Philippe, but also Barbecue was a police officer trained again during the occupation by the UN and several other leaders of those death squads, of gang leaders, who actually similarly trained. Yes, sorry.
Yeah, hold that thought, because we only, sadly, have a few minutes left. And I actually had met with Maurice Jean-Charles during that period that you spoke about and was quite shocked by the positions he was taking. But moving along, Pierre, on this international community, you know, the role of CARICOM, you know, et cetera. I'm wondering your thoughts now, because a lot of people have a lot to say about the transitional council that's been proposed. Lavalas is one member of seven right now. It's a seven-member transitional council, but I understand Louis Jean-Charles and some others are pushing for it to be an eight or nine-member transitional council. And I could only guess that they're hoping to really outvote Lavalas on there. But your thoughts on, you know, all of the machinations going on around this and the role of the international community. You've got about two minutes here.
Very quickly, myself and a number of people I've spoken to on the ground in Haiti, we feel very strongly that this is an initiative of the people of Haiti. When Fermi Lavalas proposed it in 2018, called Sali Public, a government, a transitional government of public safety. There is a history of it too. During the fall of Duvalier, there was such a transitional national council of government that had been put in place. Sadly, at the time, the overwhelming majority of the members were from the Haitian military. And so what they did, they continued Duvalierism without Duvalier. When Fermi Lavalas had initially proposed this, and it had gained a great deal of ground among people, it's meant to be something, you know, a coming together of various of competent people who would be taking on tasks to restore the democratic institutions, such as sanitation department, healthcare, education, to root out the corruption and make sure that those institutions would be working to the benefit of the Haitian people. One of the main things is the judicial system that for the past 20 years had been totally wrecked by the US-led United Nations occupation, wrecked with corruption. And so this is the whole idea of this. But right now, as many people are looking at it, just as in 1986, they see the hand of the so-called international community, but to be precise, the US and the core group, to try to derail this idea of Haitians coming together for the betterment of the people and to put in, again, as they had done in 1986, people, their minions, people who are more committed to lining their pockets, people who are more committed to pursue, to push the what the US, France, and Canada want to see, which means the theft, the plunder of our natural resources, not something that would be benefiting the Haitian people, but something that would benefit the plunder of our resources and leaving the people out of the equation. Because right. What I've heard from several people, what is lining up here? The true representative of the Haitian people there is Fermi Lavalas. And that's who the Haitian people see. But all of these other actors that are being proposed, that have been proposed, who have been proposed, are more representing or minions of the core group and the imperialist powers that are trying to impose something on the Haitian people, that the continuation of the old PHTK and occupation regimes that have brought the chaos that they have brought to Haiti today. So that's what I'm hearing from people, and I share that view as well.
Right. I'm also hearing from my sources that people on the ground are feeling that at least with a council that there is some hope, right?
Definitely. People are feeling a lot of hope. I don't mean to sound as if no, but you see, it's the struggle in the streets is now has to take place on the negotiating table. And that's why it will be important for people to keep watch and support the people of Haiti in this period of negotiation so that for sure what comes out of it would be of benefit to the Haitian people and not to benefit the imperialist powers that conducted the coup of 2004 and are continuing same way that they supported Duvalier and Duvalier's destructive policies and the policies of the for the past 20 years that have resulted in so many Haitians having to flee Haiti. losing their lives, promoting the death squads that are terrorizing the people. These are all the policies of the 2004 coup of all the occupation governments that have weaponized these outlaws and created that kind of chaos that the clip mentioned. So this is this is a rallying cry for solidarity for people to stand with us, with the Haitian people, and make sure that this time there will be a good change to benefit the people of Haiti.
Now, Pierre, just finally, all kinds of people are coming out of the woodwork as experts on Haiti. And it's creating a lot of confusion because a lot of them are using quite, you know, language from, let's say, Lavalas. They mentioned President Aristide, et cetera. But meanwhile, a number of those people are part of the operation. It seems like a contradiction, like an anti-Lavalas, Lavalas not getting anywhere near political power while kind of giving some token mention of them. But Pierre, Haiti Action Committee that you have co-founded, you have an event coming up that hopefully will help to clear up a number of things. Tell us about the event, when that is, and how people could get information about it, and who will be speaking at that event. Pierre.
Yes, that event is taking place Saturday, April 6th from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. And this is Pacific time from 1 to 3. It will be live stream. So in Oakland, people will be there. People can be there physically or they can watch the live stream. And so people can get information on HaitiSolidarity.net, which is the website of the Haiti Action Committee. And they can also check out Haiti Action Committee on Facebook to get that information. The people who will be participating are members or two members of the executive committee of Fermi Lavalas, Dr. Maris Narcisse and Pasha Vorb and Joel Pasha Vorb, who are members of the executive committee of Fermi Lavalas. And also we are having Walter Turner, Professor Walter Turner. We are having as well Dr. Rama, who's a Palestinian, who will be speaking about the giving an update on the struggle of the Palestinian people. Professor Walter Turner will be speaking about the conditions regarding many of the African countries. And also we'll have some poetry by Marvin X, a very renowned poet, and also drumming by Andrew Reynolds, accompanying poet Marvin X.
So give us the date, time, and the website where people could get information again before we have to wrap up here.
Yes, Saturday, April 6th, from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. Pacific time, and website HaitiSolidarity.net.
Well, on that note, we're going to have to leave it there. But Pierre Lavoisier, we appreciate you. We'll have you back on the show. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
Thank you very much, Margaret.
Okay, we are out of time now. I'd like to thank all of today's guests, and I'd like to thank Jose Benavides for his help with today's show. If you like a copy of today's show, please contact the Pacifica Radio Archives at 1-800-735-0230. Go online to pacificaradioarchives.org. Stay tuned for more programming on this station, and Sojourner Truth will be back on the air next Tuesday. You all please stay well and safe. We'll be right back.